Welcome everybody to the Reflux Flu Show. I'm your host Donovan Beery from How Design Live in Atlanta, Georgia. We have with us Mr. President, Sean Adams.
Well, thank you, Donovan. I'm glad to be back.
Last time you were on the show, you were AIJ National President.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
And then you liked it so much you did it again.
I know. The amount of power you wield as president is amazing. You can get anything done. You can order people to be killed. It's remarkable.
Yeah, I remember you, and especially when you were co-president for that year with Drew.
Right,
with
Drew,
Superstar
yeah.
Designer Drew
well,
Davies,
Drew was the one that really was like, let's have so-and-so killed. I really had to pull him back from that.
You got to remember that he's only like half president for 1 year.
He had a lot of anger.
So he has, issues. Where you, it's not a full 2 year term. So you have to like compact the amount of killing in one short
I know.
Short
the amount of hate
time.
Just gets piled into that.
Yeah, you're like, I've only got so many times and then, you know, no more killing. So let's get it.
If only the power you wield as AIJ president is honestly like the gavel and like I'm calling this meeting to order. And that's about it.
And then it's just herding cats and pandemonium. And
it's just, you know, it's just trying to like listen to everybody and hear what, trying to be the impartial point of view that everybody's issues, not just one group
on like
or another.
A 20-person call.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's lots of different groups out there. Some people are interested in just the media they work in. Other people are interested in a specific kind of design. Some people are ageist. There's a lot of factions, and it's your job to sort of knit the factions back together again and make us one big whole.
Well, by now, you've got to be a lifetimer. You've got to be a lifer with AIJ. So I'm assuming you still have some involvement. Like, you're in behind the scenes. You're Dick Cheney at this point.
Yeah, you want to go hunting with me?
Yeah. You know, maybe. I need somebody else there as well.
Right. Yeah, probably, yeah.
And they need to be video recording the whole thing.
No, I mean, one of the reasons I stepped in the second time was that Rick was going to retire. We knew that he was slated for retirement at the
and plus
the
it was the 100th
year.
So you were the right. President during the 100 year.
Yeah, and it was the 100 year anniversary, and all the chapters were doing lots of things. The building was in the process of being sold, and there were sort of some issues around that with the public, and so I wanted to get back at that point to see if I could resolve the crisis with the building, which was just a PR crisis. It had nothing to do with any kind of reality, and then help the chapters organize the 100-year stuff. But then I knew when Rick was leaving, that was going to be one of the most pivotal times in the history of the organization, that we would lose this amazing leader we'd had for 20 years.
Now, I forget, we have Rick. He was actually the first person we ever interviewed on my first podcast.
Oh, really? That's great.
But was the... They've had an executive before Rick, right?
Right.
But he
many.
Was the,
I mean, there have been, like, I think six before Rick, going back to 1914.
Okay, but he was the one who really kind of took it and ran the place for 20 years.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, they hadn't shifted in quite a while.
Right. I mean, Rick really grew the chapter system, and he I think he took from what was a fairly small organization. I think when he started, there was about 5,000 members and maybe 10 chapters. But it was still very New York-based, the chapters were ancillary. And he grew it into, when he left, what were there, 63 chapters and 27,000 members?
Yeah, that's something like that.
Yeah, it was this massive growth. And then, you know, he left us with this endowment of $20 million from the sale of the building. And that's, I mean, to go from where we started to being the world's largest and oldest design organization is amazing. I mean, that's an incredible achievement.
Sure. And so you're still somehow involved with AIGA, or are you just kind of advising it?
Yeah, no, I mean, I agreed, you know, when I came back that I would chair the transition, the team to find Rick's replacement. And then once that person was in place, to stay along for another 6 months just to make sure that the transition was running smoothly. And, of course, you know, we found the incredible Julie Anixter, who's remarkable. I mean, so unlike Rick in so many ways, but in great ways, and they really are like, they're both so good at running an organization and diplomacy and understanding the bigger issues and that kind of thing. And it's an exciting time. And so,
which
I
is why they
that.
Don't necessarily hire a designer, they hire an executive.
Yes. We did, during the process of looking at possible nominees for the position, many designers were brought forward, including myself. And first off, I said I would rather have my brains blown out than take that job because it's just endless griping. People just endlessly upset about everything. And a lot of work.
What, you can't make 27,000 plus people all happy at the same time?
And we're designers. We complain if the sky is the wrong color of PMS, you know? It's like, you know? Like, of course. And you know, and it wasn't the IJA of 20 years ago. It was, now we're looking at an enormous nonprofit organization with a huge staff, well, not huge, but a very large staff and a $20 million endowment. You need someone who understands executive nonprofit issues. This is not the place to take a risk and say, hey, let's hire a designer. We're really good at making images and words and ideas communicate.
And to be fair, they have the national board is normally filled with amazing designers, and
exactly.
Like 15 of them. So so the designer viewpoint is there.
It's getting through, clearly. You just don't want that person dealing with staffing issues and dealing with like financial problems. We need someone who's qualified, and that was Julie. She comes from a design background herself. She came from the strategic point of view, and so she'd worked with designers, and she understood design in the big way, like design with a big D, and what we could achieve in the world.
All right. Well, we're going to be back with Sean Adams. So, Sean, you were one half of the Adams Morioka ownership,
right? The Adams part.
Yeah, the Adams. I assume that was.
Yeah, we didn't switch names.
And you guys made an impression. You both got AIGA medals,
right,
for your contribution to the design field. Mm-hmm. But no longer.
No longer. Like all good things, it came to an end.
Did Larry Flint kick you out of his building?
We actually have been trying to get out of the building for ages.
Yeah. We were in the Flint building,
yeah, and it was the Hustler headquarters, which previous to that had been the Great Western Bank building. It was this beautiful Wilton Beckett building. Larry and his people just were on the top two floors. But
did you always run into Larry like at the food court?
I never did. Terry Stone, who worked for me, did. She saw him a couple times, and he has a gold wheelchair.
Yeah.
So she was very impressed by the gold wheelchair, but... That was it. But it, you know, over the years, we had gone from a staff of about 15 down to about 7, mostly because you just needed less people to do stuff. You know, it was like there was less manual labor involved.
I remember talking to you. You were Orinorian years ago, and you'd mentioned something where you're like, we don't have a big staff, but they all get a lot done.
Yeah, they get a lot done, and people weren't doing, you know, mechanicals, so work could get finished and moved along. And so we were like, God, we have all this extra space. This is ridiculous. Plus, we're in Beverly Hills, which the rents are not cheap. And clients would come to visit like once a month. I mean, if ever. You know, I mean, in the old days, yeah, clients came by all the time. You were always a lot of interaction. But now it was all being done remotely.
That's good for me to know because I always, you know, I run a small shop and I'm like, clients hardly ever stop by.
They never come by. They want
to
Skype.
It's nice
or they
to hear
wanna...
that even in a bigger shop in the middle of Beverly Hills, they're still like, no, we don't need to come by.
I mean, the only clients that came by were actually the client, Cedars-Sinai, which was a block away. They came over, but that was because they were a block away.
Well, I have a client that's like a block away, and I think they like it because they know, oh, we can just call and they'll come over.
Yeah.
But they don't come over.
Yeah.
I go over there.
Yeah, I think Sundance moved down the street at one point, and they were like, okay, we can come over. And although in the end that didn't work out so well because they got a new marketing director, and she came on board and said, we need to hire a name firm. And I'm like, yep, you have one. She goes, well, no, but you guys are like the firm that's just down the street, right? I'm like,
oh, geez.
No, we are not the firm. We happen to be here before you moved next to us, not the other way around.
Right.
You know? Yeah, no, we had done it for 20 years, and it was great, and we had an amazing time, and it was an amazing adventure. And it really, I think we came to that 20-year mark, and we were fortunate enough to have both gotten the AIJA medal, and I realized at one point I was like, something's not, I'm not feeling as fulfilled as I had been in the past.
Sure.
I mean, I love the work and I love the people. My creative director decided to move on, which was a huge blow to me because I worked with her so closely.
She probably wanted to work for a name company.
Probably.
Yeah.
Exactly. She went to work for Michael Bayroot. Yeah, that was it. Yeah. No, actually, she went off and I think she ended up having a baby. She was which was so fantastic. I was so happy for her. But she had been such a great partner for so long. And when she left, I was like, oh, this feels hard. And I took the opportunity to go to Berlin through Art Center, where I had been teaching for, you know, the last 20 years, and work on a project with 12 of our Art Center students. We went over there. We had a studio space, and we all did this one project together, which was a great adventure. And so for 3 months, I was over there. And the idea was, okay, I'll go over there, and I will Skype with Noreen every day, and I'll work on projects, sure. And it should be fine. And it was. The only problem was that somewhere along the middle of that process, I was walking down the street one day, and I thought, I feel weird, and I think this feeling is happiness. And I realized, I've obviously been happy at work before,
yeah.
But for the first time in so many years, I wasn't worried about overhead. I wasn't worried about a deadline. I wasn't worried about a client who might be upset about a project or having some issue. I was worried about Murphy getting the photographs he wanted for his project, or Jessica being able to take her bike to the other side of the Tiergarten because she wanted to interview someone. So I was worried about other people, and I was worried about their projects. And in the big scheme of things, I was worried about a group of 12 designers becoming the best designers they possibly could, not worried about myself. And that was a big light that went off in my head, like, wait a second, I should not be doing this for my own ego. I should be doing this to help others. And when I came back, I would love to say it was a smooth transition, but it wasn't. Obviously, it's very hard after 20 years to say, okay,
yeah,
I don't want to do this anymore.
This is a big change, yeah.
Yeah, I want to focus on helping young designers. And so, you know, we worked it out, and you know, that's what I do now. But that was the big thrust of it. It was really like changing the focus from being about myself and my welfare and making the world better for me, and making it better for people that were 24 years old and just starting out, and having to help them across the board.
And so you're now full-time at the Art Center College of Design.
I am. I'm the executive director of the graduate program, which I created, which, you know, is an amazing program that is really more about nuts and bolts graphic design. In fact, I call it the graduate graphic design program. It's not the graduate VizCom. It's not the graduate strategic planning. It's not experiential X blah blah blah.
Where do people go to find out more about the program? Or the
they can go to artcenter.edu/MGX.
MGX.
MGX, okay. Yeah. Master's Graphic, and then X is that extra special thing we throw in.
Oh, I thought
in.
It was for extreme.
Extreme, yeah. But I'm really pleased with the direction of the program, that it's unlike other programs in the country, which I felt are doing great work, but at the same time, some of them maybe are thrusting a little too far in the direction of just personal exploration and experimentation. And I wanted to make sure our graduates could leave and actually be leaders in the industry. And so, you know, Chris Hacker, who is an amazing person, has helped out with the leadership component of it. And it's really a tandem project of working to become a better designer, but not being able to leave without understanding, how do you lead? How do you manage? How do you organize teams? How do you really move into major positions?
And how big is the program? Is it still like a 12-person like you were doing in Berlin?
Right now, for the fall semester, we'll have 20, a cohort of 20. So we'll keep each class at 20. So eventually it'll sort of ramp up, so there's like, you know, two terms at a time running. But it'll be I want to keep it a small group of 20, because that's when you need individual attention, and you really need to feel like a team working together.
Yeah, I think I had like one design class where there were over 20 kids, and it was terrible.
It's terrible, yeah. You don't have time to get to everyone, and
no, it'd be a night class, so it was once a week or something, and we would sit down and teach, be like, okay, I'm gonna do individual critiques, and then you just sit in the room for like 3 hours
right.
And wait, and they'd talk to you for like 5 minutes, and you're like, I was here for 3 hours.
Yeah, why have I been here so long? Yeah, no, we've been lucky. It was the idea of like, okay, let's hold it to 15 to 20 for each class, and then then it kind of gets split up. You know, I mean, there's different faculty involved, and so let's say you came on board and you said, you know, Sean, I really want to focus on branding experiences. Well, then I'd team you up with a faculty member that focuses on branding, and so you'd end up working with that person as a prime advisor, but at the same time working with other students on other projects. So it really becomes more of a tailored program, not okay, everybody go and do one assignment where you make a box.
And is it a typical like 2-year master's then?
Or? It's 2 years master's program, yeah, with one term in the middle for the summer that's either an independent study, a Berlin project, or an internship.
Okay. Well, that sounds fantastic. So we're And how long have you been doing this now? Like, this has been...
Well, I started working on the planning of the grad program about a year ago, maybe a little bit more, a year and a half ago. So it's, and it takes a while because you have to get accreditation approval, budgets have to go through the Board of Trustees, and all that kind of thing. And so our first class will be this fall. It'll be the first time. I mean, the funny thing is Art Center is listed in you know, our ranking. I think we're number 7 in graphic design graduate programs, but we haven't had one.
Well, hey, there's nothing.
And if we have one, we might go up a little higher,
right?
Oh, I
was thinking, see, I was thinking like George Costanza would think, like, now that you have one, it's all downhill, man.
Maybe that's it, yeah.
You were number 7, but now that
now
you
they're like, whoa,
started
what are they
one,
doing there? Yeah.
They're like, we'll just drop them out of the top 20.
Exactly, exactly. No, I think, like,
you'll just be in the unranked
category.
Up a bit. Maybe you'll be in the unranked but still receiving
we're still like still in there. I mean, I'm lucky I have the Art Center brand behind it that you know, people know what the higher rate is, they know the connections and the sort of Art Center mafia, so it's a good place
right,
to do
we
it.
Look forward to seeing what the grad students do there and look forward to following that as that progresses. So
great,
we'll be right back
you.
With Sean Adams. So somewhere along the lines, I remember Adams Morioka started up a blog, but it was really just called Burning Settler's Cabin.
Right.
And I noticed it's still running around.
Yeah.
But it was never really about, like, the work that you guys, that you produced or whatever. It was just these tidbits of...
It was our weird thing. Well, it was basically my blog. I was the only one that ever made any entries into it.
What's the URL right now for those out there?
It's www.burningsettlerscabin.com.
Okay.
It's been, I think since it started in 2008, it's always been in the top 10 design blogs, you know, like the listings of those. So it's held its own there. I mean, it really started up as a way for me to just talk about anything I wanted after my first term as AIJ president. Because when you're president, you can't really say what you think. You know, you get to say
but
what...
But as an ex-president president, you can just...
You can say whatever you want. Yeah, exactly. You know, because as a president, you're not talking about for yourself. You're talking for 27,000 members. And so your opinion is a little less important than the consensus.
Well...
And,
that's only if you want to be a good president.
I guess you're right.
I would run
yeah.
that stuff to the ground.
Just who, yeah, my way or the highway. That's yeah. it. But after that, I said, God, so nice to have my voice back. And Terry Stone said, start a blog, but just post anything you want to post. And I didn't want it to be about self-promotion. I didn't want to be like, here's my latest cool project.
Well, because you guys are probably doing that somewhere else, right?
It's out there in the media. Yeah. I mean, it's like, and what's the point? In the end, you get a little bit more famous. Well, what's that do? It doesn't do anything. It's just... You know, it's people don't give you checks or sex. You know, they're just like
checks or sex. Yeah, you don't. Not,
it doesn't
neither,
happen. No. And so, you know, I thought, okay, I'll do that. And so the Burning Settler's Cabin blog was running up until the time I left Adams Morioka. And when I left, I said, Maureen, I want to take the Burning Settler's Cabin brand with me. It's been my thing for
She's
last
like, I don't want
5 years.
That.
Yeah, she was like, I've never contributed to it, and I don't write on it, so it's yours. You know. And then I decided once I had, and I was really stumped. Like, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to start another studio. What should I call it? I can't call it Sean Adams because it's taken, obviously. There's SeanAdams.com was gone a long time ago.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, there's variations I could have used. But when I talked to the smartest people I knew at Art Center who dealt with SEO, they all said, use Burning Settler's Cabin. It has huge SEO value. It is the first thing that comes up when anyone searches for anything about design. And you don't want to lose all that history. So just stick with that. And so I thought, okay, great. I'll keep it as a blog, but it also can serve as a consultancy. And that's its role now. Is that, yeah, I still post on the blog side of it, which gets the most traffic. But I also added as many case studies as possible written in language that really explain the process that aren't about, look how cool this is, look what great designers I am. But if you're if you're trying to figure out something, oh, I could go there, I could learn something. It really serves as I want it to be like the JPL site. Like, it's like I can learn about a lot of stuff there, and I can find tons of images of weird stars, you know. But
right.
I'm like, yeah, I want to put all the work in there. I want to put like good and bad. I want to put like, you know, let's really make it educational. And then the consultancy, for the most part, I work on projects that I want to work on. I work on, you know, if it's a photography book, I'll work on that. If it's you know, like Debbie asked me to do the print magazine cover. I could do that. I couldn't do that before. The studio couldn't absorb a small budget. It was always, you know, like, well, the budget's not big enough. And
yeah, and even though, and I know, like that's one of the things, like editorial just doesn't pay.
It doesn't
like,
pay. Yeah.
Magazine, I mean, they pay, but they don't.
No, but they're not. You give it to a design firm, and it's the budget's eaten up in 3 hours.
No, you give it to like a small freelancer, and they might be like, even they'd be like, this isn't that big of a job.
Yeah, exactly.
Like we will do it, and I'd be happy to get the money, but it's not all I'm doing this month.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Even close. It's not even all I'm doing today.
No, exactly. And I was like, I could spend 3 weeks on this thing, and it'll work. And now I'm working with Matt Manos, his company, very nice, and helping him out with the pro bono projects that he kind of coordinates. You know, I'm working on an annual report for a group that helps underprivileged kids go to college.
Every time I hear that, I'm like, why are they still doing annual reports?
Like, I know. Well, they have to. They're like a nonprofit, and they have to prove to their donors, and they're amazing. And it was like, it feels so good to take an organization that does great stuff and say,
I guess
they
don't do
them.
Annual reports like they did when...
No, believe me, no. It's not like, hey, let's spend $500,000 on this annual report.
No.
And so that's been great to say, I want to just focus on these and then extend the learning part of it to lynda.com and really use that as a way to help people that don't have access to good information have access to it. So, you know, if I do a course on graphic design history, it'll reach what used to be the audience at lynda.com of 2.5 million people, which was the membership base. But now that LinkedIn bought them, I think their membership is 380 million.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and so you get viewers from all around the world. And the great thing is, you know, I get these notes from people that are like, wow, I never thought this was interesting. Now I am. Or the layout and composition course where people write, say, I didn't ever understand it. When they explained it in school, it never made sense. But the way you explained it, now I see it.
And how long have you been doing the Lynda courses?
Oh, I think I've been doing those for about 5 years.
Okay.
Maybe four. I don't know. I do one a quarter. Every quarter I record and write and record a new one. In fact, I'm doing another one next week. I have to shoot one next week.
Okay. Or in this case, it's already been out a couple months.
Yeah, exactly. Well, because it's been a couple months, yeah. Yeah, it will have been because, I shoot it next week and then, you know, the assets go to the editors and then they pull it together and it gets made and up there. But the one after that, which won't be out yet, is a deep dive into the Bauhaus. So that'll be fun to do. It won't have as many viewers, but it will be a good, fun thing to do.
So you got to go over to Europe to actually visit the place?
Well, I've been. It was amazing. Yeah, sure. We did there when I was in Berlin. We did a great trip there. It was so cool. But the history course had good numbers. It's all based on, it's like TV. It's like ratings.
Right.
You know, like a course lives or dies by the numbers. And so, you know, the layout and composition course always has great numbers. It's always in the top 10.
Anything that's more broad gets better numbers.
Yeah, works great. Because as someone who does scrapbooking can watch it and get something out of it. You know, but something like the Arts and Crafts movement, like 5 people watched it. Frankly, I love that course. It's beautiful. And it has all kinds of like lascivious stories because those Arts and Crafts dudes were all up to no good.
Stuff from 1908, it was crazy.
Those are nuts. They were like cheating on wives and with each other and burning houses. And like, it was nuts. But no one's that interested in that. The one I'm doing now, which will be out already, is about the value of professional design, but it's aimed towards business. So it's specifically for business owners to watch and to understand why you should hire a professional designer and not hire the $100 thing down the street, you know, and why you, and then how to work with a designer, what not to do with a designer.
Yeah, because that's the thing. Like, you always say the advice, well, you should hire a designer, but as you know, it's kind of like, well, you should hire a contractor. And it's like, well, there's also a communication with them.
Yeah.
And working and the reasons why you hire
Why
them.
Would you do that?
Yeah.
Why? Yeah, as a business
owner, because if you don't know why
you're
hiring a designer, how would you know what designer to hire?
No. And you're like, well, why should I bother? I can get the same $100 thing. Or I can ask my friend's cousin who knows Photoshop to do it.
Yeah.
And like, you know, no. And so, it's great. I mean, Kit Heinrichs gave me the great example of the Muzak project that he did, which saved that company. I mean, it made it an incredible brand, renaissance. And we know the power of design, but I think it's hard for clients sometimes on the other end to understand why they're paying money. But it's also hard for designers to articulate why it's valuable and what they're trying to sell.
So what you're telling me is that I need to watch the Lynda thing that you're going to produce next, because it's not necessarily, even though it's geared towards designers, if I just listen to how you talk to businesses on hiring design,
right,
and I just plagiarize it, I'll sound good.
That sounds good to me, and the scripts are up there to be stolen.
Okay.
Well, I am 100% fine with that. I am
even
like,
better.
The transcripts are up there running, and I'm more than happy. People, you want to take exactly what I said and say it?
All right. Well, it's lynda.com. Search for Sean Adams. Yeah. It's burningsettlers.com.
Burning Settlers Cabin.
Cabin.
The cabin is on fire.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Or the settlers.
And Mr. President, it's been your pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much.
And hopefully we'll catch you at the next one of these.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime.
The Reflex Blue Show with Donovan Beery is hosted at 36point.com. Music by Dustlab. Find out more at myspace.com/dustlab.